Are you able to hear me in the back? Excellent. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. My name is Ryan Jones. I'm a program manager on the Windows Azure Pack team. I also have with me Sriram as well as Patrick. Sriram is a program manager on the Azure Pack team as well. And Patrick is one of our great partners with Azure Pack and System Center family of products, so with GridPro. So thank you guys so much for joining me this morning. So once again, thanks for making it here this morning early after an evening of country drinks. I hope you all had a great time. For good or for bad, it looks like one of our demo environments also had a great night at country drinks and hasn't made it out of bed just yet. So some of our first demos today will actually be showing you code in PowerPoint rather than showing you code work. I apologize. I know that this is a 400 level session, and so we all want to see lots of scripts and code. You will still be seeing them, we just won't be practicing them, okay? So with that said, let's go ahead and get started. Walk through our session objectives and takeaways. First thing is we're going to explore the integration patterns and best practices with Windows Azure Pack. Azure Pack's a pretty broad platform, and there's many ways that you can integrate this into your enterprise cloud offerings or your public cloud offerings, and we want to talk about how we recommend that you do this. The next thing that we'll do is we'll show you basic integration with PowerShell and also how you can see this occur via REST. We'll demo service desk scenarios or approval and chargeback scenarios with Service Manager and GridPro, so Patrick will be doing that for us. We'll demo some control panel scenarios, so storefront and billing, using Parallels. And then we'll also dig briefly into some advanced hosting scenarios with reselling using the Parallels solution as well. So two key things I want you to be able to see and take away today, kind of as end-to-end solutions or scenarios. Number one is WAP plus Service Desk, and number two is WAP plus Control Panel. So with that in mind, I know this is a 400-level session, but let's start things off with a brief concept review to kind of frame what we're going to talk about. So to start, a tenant comes in and signs in with an identity system. This gives them a set of claims, which gives them permissions to do things in the Azure Pack. The first thing that they do is they subscribe to a plan, which gives them access to a set of services and gives them a set of quotas that govern how they consume those services. This results in generating a subscription. And under this subscription, all usage is aggregated and all resources are managed. These quotas and these subscription notifications then fan out to all of the resource providers in a given WAP cloud. Okay? And so the important thing is these concepts right here are actually central to everything that we're going to be talking about today. So I wanted to make sure that we had this established as kind of a solid footing for us to get started. The other thing is, if you want more detail from kind of a architecture and logical flow perspective, we do have additional content in this area, but we don't have time to cover it today. We covered it in the pre-day, which will be made available online. And then we also have a service delivery session available on Microsoft Virtual Academy, where you can also go in depth and explore this more. So let's move on to integration patterns and best practices. This is what I call the build or buy part of our presentation. There are two ways that we see people integrate the Azure Pack into their environment. Number one is they throw away the Windows Azure Pack portal and you consume all of the various APIs available in Windows Azure Pack directly. This is not actually our recommended best practice, while it is a fully supported scenario. And the reason why is, how many of you know how often we update Windows Azure Pack? How often? How many months?
3 days.
Yes, every 3 months we update Azure Pack. So the question is, do you want to update your control panel every 3 months to absorb the changes, the new features that we added per your request? Probably not. So therefore, what we recommend is you integrate with a certain set of APIs in the Azure Pack that are more constant, that change less frequently. And by doing so, you're able to leverage the Azure Pack experiences alongside your other experiences. And we'll be demoing that through the rest of the day. And so what this means is, first, a provider or a service desk defines an Azure Pack plan in the WAP admin portal. Number two, they then create an offer in the service catalog referencing the WAP plan. Number three, you'll sell the offer to the customer through the panel. Number four, provision or enroll the user for that offer via the panel, which results in the creation of a subscription. You have the ability to show the price of that and then modify users on that subscription. Users then log in and use WAP services through the WAP tenant portal. WAP usage on a per subscription basis is then gathered by the billing system, and the panel can show billing or chargeback impact per subscription at the end of the day. Okay? So these are, from a high level, our integration best practices, and what you'll see is we consume a set of APIs. Okay? So on the right-hand side of things, you have the service provider panel or the enterprise service desk. And so what you'll see is through PowerShell, you call Git Management Service Plan, or you call WAC Plans, WAC Plan ID for the REST APIs. You add management service users to set the owner of a subscription or set co-administrators, and then add management service subscription to actually create an instance of a WAP subscription. Okay? Additionally, when we go through to approve subscriptions that were acquired inside of the Azure Pack side of things, we can perform a post against the external system to acquire an approval. We can update co-admins going back to Azure Pack. And then the panel or chargeback system can then acquire usage data from Azure Pack and pull that in. So with that said, let's talk about identity a little bit more. On that very first slide, we have that triangle in the top right-hand corner. Let's talk about this. So one, Azure Pack is totally based on claims-based identity. It's very central to how we work. You'll notice that we have two portals in the Azure Pack. One is the WAP admin portal, one is the WAP tenant portal. Each of them are configured to use their own authentication site. By default, the admin portal uses our Windows authentication site. It can also be configured to use Active Directory Federation services. And then the WAP tenant portal is configured to use our tenant auth site. The tenant auth site, by default, is the ASP.NET membership site. It can also be used and is recommended that you use ADFS for your tenant auth site in production as well. So, steps for configuring identity. Number one, configure the management portals to trust ADFS using set management service relying party settings. Number two, config ADFS to trust the management portals via add ADFS relying party trust. Number three, configure the tenant offsite to trust ADFS using set management service identity provider settings. And number four, configure the tenant offsite to trust ADFS, so add ADFS identity provider trust. So you do these things, and now you have identity set up as needed in your Azure Pack environment. Now you might be asking, wait a second, I came here to talk about portal integration. Why is that guy on stage talking about identity? Well, the thing is, we view that people, when they're using an external system, whether it's a service desk application or a control panel, you don't want them to need to log in multiple times. And so by configuring the Azure Pack and your service desk or panel application to use the same identity provider, you can use single sign-on across these different systems. Okay, and we'll actually demo this later today with the Parallels solution. Okay, so I'm going to skip over this because we have a lot to cover in a very short amount of time. Okay, so let's start digging into our APIs. We have 6 types of APIs that we're going to be covering today. First is plan and add-on CRUD. Second is user creation and updates, deletes, subscription CRUD, approval APIs, pricing APIs, and usage APIs. Okay? For the first 1, 2, 3 of these, this is where our demo environment is still struggling from country drinks last night, so we're going to just go through those in code together, but I will be able to actually show you and consume the approval, pricing, and usage APIs from PowerShell and actually show you how in a couple of moments. You can actually implement your own approval pricing and usage APIs without writing a single line of code. Okay? So the very first thing that we have to do is we have to tell the Azure Pack commandlets how they communicate with the admin API surface area in Azure Pack. Three primary steps for doing this. Number one is we point our PowerShell commandlets at the admin API endpoint. Number two, we point it at the admin auth site. And then number three is we use those two URIs to procure a token. Okay, this token will then be used for all of our subsequent calls to the service management API that you'll see today. So you'll notice every time there'll be a switch dash token, and we'll refer to that token, as well as we'll refer to that admin URI over and over and over again. One other thing you'll notice is at the very end, we have disable certificate validation. That's because my test environment does not have a valid certificate on it. Do not do that in production, please, okay? This is a do not do, what's the saying? Do as I say, not as I do, okay? So, plan creation, PowerShell, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 main commandlets. Add management service plan, which creates a plan. Add management service plan service, which adds service to the plan. Add management service list quota, which adds a list of quotas to the plan. Add management service quota setting, which adds a quota setting to the quota list. And update management service plan quota, which updates the quotas in a plan. So let's start by creating a plan with add management service plan. Plan, add management service plan, the admin URI, the token that I mentioned earlier will disable cert validation. I will provide a name for my plan. I will set its state to public. We have three states for plans: public, private, and decommissioned. Public means that anyone can come to the portal and subscribe to the plan. Private means that the admins can enroll people in the plan. Decommissioned means that people can still use the plan if they've already subscribed to it. However, no new subscriptions are allowed to that plan. Okay? I can define the maximum number of times a given user account can subscribe to the plan, and then I can also specify an invitation code so that only users who possess this code can enroll in or sign up for the plan. So, next step is we're going to add a service to the plan with add management service plan service. So the first thing that I do is I use Git Management Service Resource Provider to find the resource provider in my environment that matches SQL servers, or I get my SQL Server RP. This might be different if you're wanting to build a plan for VMs or websites or service bus. Okay? The next thing I do is I add this resource provider to the plan. And so you'll see I do that by specifying the service name, the instance ID, and the plan ID to which I want to add it. The next thing I do is I instantiate a quota list using new management service quota list. I then add a list quota to that. And then finally, I add a quota setting to the quota. And one heads up here, that big, long, ugly thing at the bottom, that is JSON that is actually unique to each resource provider. So it's unique for SQL servers, it's unique for websites, it's unique for SPF. One tricky thing about that is there's not actually a very good way to get it. You have really two options. One is you can go look at the database. I know we always say never go look at the database. You can go look at the database. The other option is use Fiddler and watch how we build that JSON in the admin UX and use that. So I know that's not an elegant solution, but when I had to put the demo together, that's how I figured it out. So little hint and, you know, caveat for you. So finally, I now have my quotas and my quota list, so I will finally update it. So I take that and I pipe it to update management service plan quota, and we are done. So we have created a plan together, including SQL Server RP. We've set quotas on it, and then we've actually updated that plan. So now let's shift over into add-ons, which are additional bundles of capacity which can be added to an existing subscription. Okay? So we have six primary commandlets used for add-on management and creation. Add management service add-on, which creates the add-on. Add management service add-on service, which adds a service to the add-on. Add management service list quota, which adds a quota list to the add-on. Add management service quota setting, which adds quota settings to the quota list. Update management service add-on quota, which updates add-on as it's in a plan. And then add management service plan add-on, which links an add-on to the plan. So let's look at these in practice, okay? Add-on, add management service add-on. One thing you'll notice is this is almost the exact same syntax that we used for creating the plan, okay? So I provide a display name, I provide a state, be it public, private, or decommissioned, and I specify the maximum number of times this add-on can be purchased with a given plan. The next thing I do is I get my resource provider, and then I add that service to the add-on. The next thing I do is I instantiate a quota list. I go through and I connect my RP to it, and then once again I add that fun quota setting with the long JSON to that. I then update it, as you see here. Okay? And then finally, and this is the most important step, I take the add-on and I link the add-on to the plan that I created earlier. Okay? So with where we're at right now, I have a plan, I have an add-on, but nobody has subscribed to them. So I've effectively just created the entry in my service catalog, for lack of a better way of talking about it. So let's talk a little bit about user and subscription creation. The first thing I want to talk about is that the actual user exists in the identity provider, whether that's ADFS, whether that's ASP.NET Membership, or whether it's some other WS Trust identity provider. However, what we do is we create a user in WAP which maps to an external user principal name, okay? And so what we'll turn around and do is we'll create a subscription which references the plan that we want and the user that we want to be the owner of the plan, okay? So let's look at this in practice. And you'll have to forgive me, my dog, she's a 120-pound Black Russian Terrier, is going to be the subject or the owner of this plan today. So my dog really likes cloud computing. So I set my username equal to tasha@jones.com. I'll set my user, as you can see right here, name and email both being equal to tasha@jones.com, and I will set this user as active. The next thing I will do is I will create subscription. So I'll add management service subscription. I will reference the account admin live email ID and PUID, the plan ID, and then a friendly name of this subscription, which, haha, Tasha is my dog. And so by running that right there, we have now instantiated a subscription which referenced the plan that we created earlier, which referenced the user that I created earlier, and yeah, it's good to go at this point, okay? So now let's walk through common subscription updates. So the first one that we see, and it's probably the most common, is adding an add-on, which references the add-on that we created earlier. The next is adding a co-administrator, which references a user. And then the final one is suspending a subscription. So think of suspending for non-payment or fraud or these sorts of things. Or, you know, yeah, just they didn't pay the bill, right? So first step, let's add an add-on to a subscription. So add management service subscription add-on. You'll see what I do is I specify a subscription ID and then the add-on that I want to add to it. Okay? Next scenario. Let's look at adding co-admin to a subscription. So in this case, the username is going to be my daughter, Hollis. And so the first thing I do is I create the new user for Hollis. And then the next thing I do is I update management service co-administrator. And I specify the subscription ID, and I specify the co-admin name, which references the user up above. Okay? Now, one other important note here is in this case, we are using a user principal name as a co-administrator. One very powerful feature of the Windows Azure Pack when you use ADFS as your identity provider is you can specify groups as your co-administrator as well. And so this is very good and very important for team collaboration scenarios where you want groups of people to be able to manage a subscription rather than just individuals. Okay? So then finally, enabling and disabling a subscription. You can see these are fairly straightforward. I disable management service subscription, providing the subscription ID, and then I can enable it again, also specifying the subscription ID. Okay? Now, what happens when I actually want to modify or delete these things? Well, let's talk about deleting them first. In this case, what you can see is this is how I clean up my environment every time I run this demo script. And what I do is I get all of the subscriptions, I get all of the users, I get all of the plans, I get all of the add-ons, and then I pipe them directly to the remove either subscription, user, plan, or add-on commandlets. And it cleans up my environment in, you know, a couple of seconds. One quick note is you'll notice that for the last two commands, I use a for each. The reason why is because the bottom two commandlets don't accept input from the pipeline. So just a heads up that might help you as you're working with these commandlets. Okay? So with that in mind, we just covered like 80 commandlets and I think 20 minutes. So should I pause briefly for questions about what we've covered to this point? Any questions about creating, updating, deleting plans, add-ons, subscriptions, or users via PowerShell? No? No? Okay. So either I did a very good job explaining it or a very, very bad job explaining it. I hope it's the former and not the latter. So one other thing about this, had I been able to show you the code running this morning rather than showing you just the commandlets on the slides, one of the cool things is, you know how we used the token, the URI, and we disabled cert validation for each of those commandlets that we ran earlier? All of those admin commandlets are consuming our admin REST APIs. And so the thing is, if you want to see, oh, I want to, you know, communicate with these APIs directly via REST or something like that, you can run Fiddler in the background the whole time and you'll be able to see all the calls that our commandlets make. So it's very, very easy to switch back and forth between PowerShell and REST. Now, with that said, if you don't like Fiddler or something like that, all of those REST APIs are documented on MSDN and TechNet, so we do have that available to you. I know that you've come a long way today, so we're not going to read TechNet documentation together, okay? So, with that in mind, let's move on to approval and pricing APIs, and we'll get to do some fun demos here, okay? So, first, let's talk about what notifications are in the Azure Pack. So, what we realize is there are a number of workflows that are normally a part of cloud management, you know, actions where we need to communicate with external systems. The first thing that we hear about in whether it's a hoster scenario or an enterprise scenario is, hey, if I'm a hosting service provider, I want to make sure that someone can pay for the services before I give them access to them. Or in an enterprise scenario, I want to ensure that I have appropriately onboarded a user for a given service and I have, you know, appropriate chargeback information and these sorts of things before I allow them to start consuming things. And so what we do is we have a notification service which will post to an external URI information based on subscription creation, add-on enlistment, and then deletion, or I guess unsubscription, and then removal of an add-on as well. Okay, and so you'll see the four URIs that are associated with that up here on the screen. And so, and then finally, the other thing that we have is we have the ability to show pricing for a given plan or add-on from an external system in through the Azure Pack portal. Okay, and so with that in mind, the first thing that you have to do is you have to tell the Azure Pack where the external notification system resides. And so the first thing that I do is that commandlet will not work. There's a typo there. A notifications endpoint is equal to ignore the admin URI, and then it's the environment name and port number, so on and so forth. There is actually a bug in this commandlet where if you have anything after the port number, we will accept it, but we will ignore it. So just a little heads up, something I learned while I was putting this deck together. So that's a bug that's a candidate for update rollup 5. So once again, just heads up, FYI for you guys as you take this home. So the next thing that I do is I set the management service notification subscriber. I give it a name, and then I set its subscriber type. I enable it. I use the endpoint I specified above, and I set the authentication mode. Once that's done, I restart the web app that's associated with my usage service in the Windows Azure pack. Okay? So three big things I want to talk about here. Number one is we have three different notification subscriber types. The first one is billing service, where these calls or notifications are blocking. So until we receive, until we, you know, post and successfully get something back, we will block the subscription creation or add-on enlistment or removal of those things. And then we also send the pricing request to this type of endpoint. Okay? Second thing is we have what we call a mandatory service. And this is where it's still a blocking call, but we don't forward any of the pricing requests. Okay? So this might be in an area where you don't show pricing for plans or add-ons to your end users. And then the final one is an optional service, okay, where it's non-blocking altogether. The final thing is authentication mode has two acceptable values. One is basic for basic authentication, and then the other is none. And so for our simple little example today, our authentication mode is in fact none. Okay? So, very briefly, if we look at the subscription create notification request and response, you'll see what we do is we post to that URI that was set earlier at WAC subscriptions, and then you'll see over here the body that we send each time. And we show information about the subscription ID, information about the account admin, and then a bunch of other things that I'm betting in most cases you'll probably ignore. That the most important information is really up there towards the top. And so from a the protocol perspective, you have the option of responding with a 200 for approval or any sort of error code. Typically 409 is the one we see most often, or sometimes 403, if you don't want this person to be able to subscribe to this particular plan. So for delete, it's the same thing. However, that third line up there, you'll see there's a method, which is now delete. So you'll see it changed. Here it's post. Here it's delete, even though the API call is still a post. I know that's a little weird. For add-on creation, once again, you'll see we go to subscription add-ons, method being post. We provide information about the add-on ID, and then we provide information about the entity parent ID, which is the parent subscription to which the add-on is being attached. And then for add-on delete, once again, same URI, subscription add-ons, but method being delete, everything else follows the same pattern, okay? So let's walk through pricing really quickly, and then I'm gonna show you how you can very quickly whip one of these things up without needing to even launch Visual Studio. So pricing queries, what we'll see is we get, and you'll see once again that endpoint we created earlier or specified earlier for the notification service, WAC plan price, and then we have an ID for the particular instance of the plan, the username that's requesting it, and then the language as well. And so what we do is we just look for a 200 response back, content type application JSON, with a quoted string inside with the price. So you can see that my plan ASDF is actually a very premium plan and has a going rate of €1 million. So I hope that many, many of you want to buy this particular Azure Pack plan so that we can have a big party later tonight. So next item is the add-on pricing query request and response. So get add-on price. Once again, you'll see the idea for the plan, this or for the add-on. You'll see this is add-on blah. I know my names are very creative. And you'll see that we provide information about the username that is procuring the add-on, as well as the subscription ID on which we're looking to attach the add-on. The response here is the exact same as what we were looking for the plan query, and so also my add-on is quite premium, quite posh as well, and it has a going price of €1 million as well. So please purchase many of these add-ons as well, so you know we can all go have a big party later tonight. So let's actually go through and demo this. Unlock my machine. That is not me. There we go. Hey, I had three choices, right? I was going to get one of them eventually. So this is my admin environment. So what I've actually done is, how many of you have used Fiddler before? Okay, good, a lot of you. Very powerful tool, and it's actually how I have prototyped our very, very advanced subscription approval system, as well as our pricing system. Okay, and so what I've done is I'm going to pull up my Fiddler session right here, and you'll see that I've configured an autoresponder. And so the thing is, if my request matches price, then you'll see I actually have a specific response that I send back. So I'll just open this up real fast. And so here is my pricing response. And so as you'll see earlier from my example, I send back a 200 OK, content type application JSON, and show a price of 1 million euros. Okay? And so if I turn around and then go to my tenant portal, give that a few seconds to load here. Fingers crossed. Maybe while we wait for Tenant Portal to come up for us, are there any questions about notifications and approvals or the pricing query APIs? No questions? I know I have a question. When is this thing going to load? Give it a few more moments here. Oh, okay, there we go. So I am going to log in. So it is now logging me into the tenant portal. This will take a few moments as well. So by the way, what you'll notice just happened there is I went to the tenant portal. I did not have those claims. I did not have a token. So what happened is the tenant portal redirected me over to our ASP.NET membership site. I provided my credentials, which generated the claims, generated the token. I was then sent back to the tenant portal, which I'm now logging into right now. And so I go to New, My Account, and I should be able to add subscription. When it hopefully loads the plans here in a moment, what we'll be able to see is we'll be able to see the pricing of that plan. We just have to wait for those little blue stripes to do a few more laps. Give it a few more moments here. Yeah, I guess these responses are taking a while. They're going across the Atlantic and across the U.S. Maybe that's why the lines are going in so many circles. They're wanting to accurately reflect the distance of this particular API call. And it looks like that may not come back. Let's give this one more try. Let's try it for add-on instead. Ah, excellent, worked immediately. So you'll see it found my amazing blah add-on, and you'll see that my price came back as 1 million euros. Okay, so how did this happen? Well, we'll go over into Fiddler, and we will be able to see through the list here. It should take just a second. Git add-on with price. And so we're able to retrieve our price for that add-on. So that shows pricing. Going back to the, let's try to procure a subscription as well. So I will go over to here. I will close. This is going to be risky, guys, because this is the plan thing that didn't load for us a few moments ago. We'll give it 5 seconds. If it doesn't, actually, I tell you what, we can add an add-on, and that will hit the approval pipeline as well, since that was loading. So I'll go to my account, add add-on, I'll click here. My add-on is being created, and you'll see that it succeeded. If I go back over to here, to Fiddler, we should be able to see that we had a 200 response. So here, instead of giving the price back, what we did was we just returned a 200 message, which allowed the add-on acquisition to go through. Okay. So, with that said, let's switch back over to a different set of APIs. So, we've created our plans, add-ons, subscriptions, and users. We have enumerated pricing information about them. We have approved acquisition. So now people can go in and create databases, virtual machines, websites, so on and so forth. But what if I want to bill people based on what they've actually consumed? Well, for doing this, we have a set of usage APIs. There's two main steps here that we're going to walk through today. Number one is configure the usage service via PowerShell. And then the second step is we're going to consume the usage APIs. These are REST APIs, but we're going to be consuming them today via PowerShell using invoke REST method. Okay? So first step here is set management service setting. We specify the namespace, we give it a username, and then a value, which in this case is usage user. And then the next step is I'm going to set management service setting. Password, value, once again, super secure, usage password. One important thing, we do require that last switch in code. It's really easy to forget, and then it doesn't work, and then you're banging your head up against the wall trying to figure out why. So very important thing to do there. And so then to actually consume the usage service, the first thing you do is you get a credential. In this case, I'll be providing my awesome usage user and usage password credential. I will then hit the URI of the usage service. And the usage service is interesting in that the way you collect data from it is by specifying the record number that you want to start with and then the size of the batch of records that you want to pull across the wire. Okay? And so you'll see here I have a start ID as well as a batch size. Okay? Now, one important thing is the responses that I'm going to get back is just a bunch of usage records as reported by the different resource providers. And one of the things to be mindful of in the Azure Pack today is that each of the resource providers have their own way, both contractually and semantically, of providing usage data. And so what this means is the actual meaning of the usage data that is emitted by the SQL resource provider. It may have slightly different meaning than the usage data that's provided by virtual machines, which is different from websites. So to give you a more concrete example, the usage data that the SQL resource provider emits is effectively a logging of CRUD operations against databases. Okay? The usage information that SPF provides for VM clouds is aggregate usage for a given subscription for 1 hour period. The data that the website service returns is the amount of consumption of given you know, resources since you last asked, or since the usage collector last asked the website service. So the important thing is, as you process these records, you'll need to process them differently based on the type of resource provider that you're concerned with. Okay? So let's actually turn around and do this. I'm going to switch back to number 6. I'm going to go over to PowerShell. I'm going to pull up my script. We're actually only going to be running a couple of commands from this script, so pull it up. You guys probably recognize these last 4 commands from our last slide, so I'm going to copy that. I'm going to go over here. It's going to prompt me for my credential. So usage user, usage password. Okay, and now I'm going to invoke this REST method. And so what you'll see here is I have 4 usage records about consumption of databases. So you'll see provider name, SQL servers. You'll see the database count and allotted space at those points and times. And then you'll see the subscription ID for which those particular usage records are relevant. Okay? So I did this example in PowerShell just so that we wouldn't need to go into Visual Studio and start building complex code. But I hope this illustrates to you the way that we're able to call into the usage endpoint and enumerate usage records. Okay? So we've talked about a lot of different interfaces today. I know it's been a bit of a whirlwind up here for me. I'm sure it's been a lot of content for you. What I'd like to do is take a step back now and actually take a look at particular examples of how people have integrated with these APIs. And so with that said, I'd like to introduce Patrick from GridPro. Patrick.
Thank you, Ryan. Perfect. So first of all, thanks for having me here today, and thank you all for coming. We're an ISV coming from the ITSM world. We work a lot with Service Manager. And what we've done is we're taking the ITSM part towards the hybrid cloud, right? So we've extended Windows Azure Pack with capabilities from System Center Service Manager for you guys to be able to do ITSM scenarios for your hybrid cloud resources. And basically, I just want to get one slide over here. So let me first point you to this. If you want to know more about GridPro software, go to gridprosoftware.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and so on. Now, having that said, I want to point out that we've gone through some APIs right now, so how you can interact with Windows Azure Pack from outside in. What we've done is we've extended Windows Azure Pack, the Windows Azure Pack portal. So we've done an admin site UI extension, a tenant portal extension, and hooked up a new resource provider, which is basically a web service that can feed the portal with information. So let me run through a quick demo of this, show you the capabilities we've added, and then we can just quickly walk through the what we've been using in the SDK and APIs. So, number 7, thank you. So first of all, this is the admin site, right? You know this. You can see request management in the top. That is coming from GridPro. So that is allowing you to hook up Windows Azure Pack to our resource provider, which is a web service that will feed Windows Azure Pack with information about tickets coming from System Center Service Manager. So there's a connection to that specific web service. It's basically a URL pointing out where do I want to go and get information. So what we're going to walk through is how you can now enable an approval workflow in a tenant onboarding scenario. We did see some API calls that you could use for getting an approval functionality on subscription management, more of a machine approval scenario. I'm going to show you a human workflow scenario where someone is going to review a request and then make a decision if this is going to be allowed or not. So before we get into the tenant portal, let's just quickly take a look at System Center Service Manager here. So I'm in System Center Service Manager, and we're looking at a request offering. So in Service Manager, there's a service catalog where you can go and define new offerings. You define things like, what should this offering be called? You point out an icon, you give it a description, and yet then you define some questions that needs to be answered before you can go and take this information and do some automation or do manual activities and so on. So here I have two questions. I'm going to ask for a plan that someone wants to subscribe for, and I'm going to allow them to select co-admins right when they do their request. So this will soon make perfect sense when you see this lighting up in the tenant portal. So having that said, when someone has created a request, there will be a ticket in Service Manager that someone needs to go and review. When there's been an approval, we will do the tenant onboarding. So let's see the other part of the UI extension in Windows Azure Pack. So we're now entering the tenant portal as a new user. So this is an enterprise scenario where we're using our capabilities. So I basically created a default plan in Windows Azure Pack that only gives users access to our capabilities that will make them, it will enable them to do requests towards System Center Service Manager. So they get the welcome message, since they are a completely new portal user, and they can only access requests and activities. So they have no other services available in that plan, right? So the only thing they can do now is go to request, create request, and here is information coming from the service catalog in Service Manager. So we're pulling in that configuration that you are able to do in System Center Service Manager, and we're now allowing a user to go and request a new plan. This means that you could basically add any kind of offering through configuration, walking through a wizard, and define this kind of experience where a form is dynamically rendered for the users in the tenant portal. So it's kind of a way to allow you to add functionality through configuration. So the user is presented to select the plan. I'm going to do add SQL services here and add a co-admin, Mr. Jonas. So I'm actually searching the CMDB of Service Manager doing this. And none of this is like hard-coded. You go to Service Manager, you define this experience in the wizard. So by submitting that, I now created a ticket in System Center Service Manager. So still, the user has no access to other services. They are not able to create VMs, SQL databases, etc. But they can see that they have a request towards the service desk, and they can follow up on that ticket, see what's the status of that ticket. They can see the actual human process that needs to take place before they get access to the SQL services inside of Windows Azure Pack. So in here, we can see that there's actually a approval step required. And then there's going to be an automation step, which is going to be Service Manager firing off a runbook in Service Management Automation, a PowerShell workflow orchestration engine that will actually use the admin APIs that we saw earlier and go and provision this new subscription that will give the user access to SQL services functionality in Windows Azure Pack. So if we just refresh that quickly, we should see that Service Manager has now initiated the first step of the process, which is an approval part of the process. So I will switch over to another user session. Let me see here. Here we go. Need to refresh that. So now I'm basically in here as a cost owner. So let's say that this tenant user walked onto the portal and they want to be able to create databases for a new project running in the organization. The cost owner can now go to the tenant portal and click on one of these activities which basically describes the request. So in here, he can see the detailed information about the request. So the selected plan was SQL services. There was a co-admin added to that request. And once I'm pleased with the information, I'm going to go and click approve. I can enter a reason. And all of this is now being tracked in Service Manager. So all the information that we're seeing here is coming from System Center Service Manager. So that has been approved. So if we now go back to the initial tenant portal experience here, where we're tracking the request, we will now see that System Center Service Manager will update the information about the ongoing process. So the approval step has been completed. Service Manager will now fire off an SMA runbook, Service Management Automation runbook, that will use the admin APIs to go and create the subscription for the user, giving him the additional capabilities in the tenant portal. So let's do another refresh here. We should see that it's now in progress. And this means that Service Manager will use one of our other products, which is the connector between Service Manager and Service System, sorry, SMA. Let's go for SMA. Country drinks. So basically, Service Manager firing off that SMA runbook, which means if we now go to the tenant portal and we do a quick refresh, any second now, when I give it another try, we should see the SQL services ribbon show up on the left-hand side because the new capabilities have been added for this user. There we go. So now you see that the tenant user is able to use those capabilities. So this is like showing you that us as an ISV is not only able to use the APIs from outside in, like the more of a control panel integration, we're also able to go and extend the admin portal, the tenant portal with new capabilities, creating our own resource provider, which enables us to get new information into the tenant portal experience. We've also implemented support for the usage scenarios. So now Windows Azure Pack is actually pulling usage information from Service Manager. So surfacing information about number of minutes spent on incidents for a specific subscription inside of Windows Azure Pack. So let's see here. Let's go back to the slide. So to summarize, right? The admin portal is using the resource provider to pull in information so you can do configuration for the service for the ITSM experience in Windows Azure Pack. The tenant portal is using the resource provider to do and go and instruct Service Manager to do things and pull up information and expose that in the tenant portal. We had Service Manager firing off a runbook that would use the admin APIs to go and provision the subscription. And this was only one of the thousands of different scenarios you could use our extension to extend functionality of Windows Azure Pack. So with that said, I want to hand over to you guys again. You can continue.
Thank you so much, Patrick. So once again, an amazing example of how people are able to consume the APIs in the Azure Pack to facilitate net new and very robust scenarios for service desk and ITSM type scenarios. So now what I'd like to do is change gears a little bit. We said one of the last things that we'd start digging through was control panel scenarios as well as some advanced reseller scenarios and functionality. And with that said, what I'd like to do is hand the mic over to my partner in crime, Sri, so that he can talk to you a little bit about reseller functionality, how you can do that in the Windows Azure Pack, and how in particular one of our partners, Parallels, facilitates this. So, Sri.
Thanks, Ryan. Hey guys, I'm Sriram Natarajan. I'm a program manager with Windows Azure Pack. And one of my major aspirations in life is to not be that guy who kept you from your lunch. So I'm going to really go through this as much in detail as possible and try to get done in time. So today we're going to talk about Azure Pack reseller functionality. And by that, I mean we're going to be talking in detail about how you can use Windows Azure Pack along with your existing storefront or service provider panels and be able to be able to integrate those two together and, in a sense, offer a reseller functionality with Windows Azure Path. And I'll show you a demo of, as Ryan said, I'll show you a demo of how one of our partners today has done this, Parallels. I'll go in detail about their portal and see if we can, like, you know, correlate what I'm showing on the slide to what you're actually seeing on screen. And I'm going to shift gears a little bit after that, and I'm going to go into a couple of setup extensibilities that you guys can do while setting up Azure Pack so that you can enable reseller functionalities. Okay, so quickly, what is reselling? When we talk about reselling, we typically have like about four personas coming into picture. You have a base provider or a service provider. The purpose of this role or the purpose of this person is that he owns the infrastructure. He owns your, you know, Hyper-V host. He owns your underlying infrastructure. And he's able to control the entire stack. He is also capable of provisioning resellers, right? So a reseller is a guy who comes in, talks to the base or service provider, and says, hey, I want to sell your infrastructure, and I want to convert your infrastructure into services, like, you know, from being able to, from having a Hyper-V machine to being able to offer the ability to create virtual machines. So the difference between infrastructure and a service, right? So a reseller comes and he says, hey, I want to be able to resell your infrastructure, maybe convert them into plans or offers, and be able to give it to my customers. So he is capable of managing his own set of users. He's capable of managing his own storefronts and be able to provide additional value-added support. So apart from what the base provider is saying, he will be the guy who you, if you are a customer, go to buy your resources and possibly contact for support, right? And then you have a customer, an IT pro or a dev. This is typically the person who basically spends in an organization, right? He can be like, you know, the CTO, or he can be the accounting person who actually purchases stuff from the reseller. And after this, the developer or a person who's actually building on top of the Azure Pack stack can actually go in and access his resources. Clear so far? We're going to be talking about these personas in the next three, four slides over and over again, so it's actually important you understand each of their roles, right? So the difference here is from the base provider to reseller, as you can see, he provides infrastructure and platform services. And so the question is, okay, why can't the customer directly go to the base provider, right? Why a reseller in between? The advantage or the effect of a reseller is that apart from providing the base provider services, he can also provide additional value-added services, say like support, or he can actually integrate multiple systems and offer to you as a special offer. So a reseller would be the person that you go to get it, right? So reseller architecture, how does a typical reseller architecture work with WAP? So you have the base provider who, as a part of his business, has like a shopping cart, a bunch of catalogs, he manages certain users and billing relationships. Additionally, he also provides another person called reseller the ability to resell. So what he's going to do is going to take what the base provider offers him and repackage it into maybe smaller entities, maybe add more services to it, and he kind of creates these things called a resell plan or a resell offer, right? What this does is effectively go into the Windows Azure Pack system, the APIs that Ryan actually ran you through, the add-ons, the plans, the subscriptions, and creates equivalent of a plan. So for instance, a reseller can say, hey, if I have a basic to go or basic free plan, go in and create a plan in Windows Azure Pack, which basically has like two databases, three websites, and two VMs, and map them together. So when somebody purchases an offer from my reseller portal, they would automatically get a subscription to that basic plan that was created as a part of the offer. And like as Patrick said, like through SMA, through PowerShell workflows, through API calls, you will be able to automate this workflow pretty straightforward, right? So the customer comes in, he's going to be like, okay, so the reseller's given me three offers, so I'm going to pick the free because I want to try, right? So he's going to go and he's going to go to the SP panel and he's going to be like, give me one of these offers. This will trigger a workflow that says, create a subscription for that customer. Once the subscription has been provisioned, the IT pro or dev can actually go in and start creating resources through the WAP tenant portal. This is a typical representation of one of the different reseller models that you can do with WAP. And I picked this scenario because this will closely map to the demo that I'm showing you of how Parallels did things, right? So one more time. This slide might actually be familiar to you that Ryan actually showed you earlier on, right? So you have the base provider who's got the Windows Azure Pack stack. He's able to offer a panel integration, show you catalogs, users, and billing so the customer can come in and purchase, and you have the IT pro or dev. So in a reseller scenario, this is going to change a little bit, right? So the base provider, same thing, creates plans, right, and creates offers. Now, additionally, he also creates resellers who, through the reseller panel, goes in and creates a resell offer and maps it to an offer sent to you by the base provider, right? Exposes it through the catalog and manages his users. Now, the customer is going to come to the control panel, look at the catalog, and pick a resell offer. Now, when he selects a resell offer, a workflow gets triggered, and a subscription is created on a Windows Azure Pack stack. And now the IT pro or dev is able to log into the WAP tenant portal and be able to consume services. Now, once this flow is done, you need to be able to accumulate usage. You need to be able to actually, like, the point of all this is to actually charge money for the usage, right? We all want to make money. So the services, the billing system can actually pull it. And again, like the usage API that Ryan just showed you, using the billing APIs, using the approval APIs, you should be able to pull the services and send it directly to the resell panel so they can actually bill it to the customers. This is typically how a resell workflow happens in Windows Azure Pack, right? So really quick, I just spoke through this, so I'm not going to go over 10 steps again. But if you get the slide deck, that's the explanation for my previous slide, the 10 steps that typically happen when a resell operation happens, right? So that being said, let's quickly go take a look at demos. Demo time. Okay. So this is a resell portal. So the point where I'm going to be starting here, just to give you context, is that as a user, I will be able to go into a storefront, be able to select an offer. That is one scenario. Once I do that, a subscription gets created, and I can actually go to my Azure Pack, right? That is one scenario. A second scenario that I'm going to show is that I, as a reseller, can go into a portal and create my own custom offers and expose it on my storefront. That's the second scenario. The third scenario is I, as an end user or an IT pro or a dev, as I showed you in that particular persona, can go into the Parallels portal and be able to go to the tenant, WAP tenant portal and consume services. And what I'll also show you in there is because the Parallels is integrated with the Parallels Automation STS, they will actually be able to do single sign-on from the Parallels portal onto the WAP tenant portal. Right? So this is one of the storefronts. So I, as an end user, can actually go in, say, go to hosted Azure services, and I can actually see three offers that have already been created for me that I can consume. So I, before this session, I actually went and I created an offer called TEED01 that I can actually go price. So when I click on buy, I, as an end user, will be taken to, you know, the billing information, be able to provide my billing data and actually get a subscription to Windows Azure Pack. So this is a typical integration of panel with Windows Azure Pack APIs. So an offer which will trigger a subscription creation, right? There is no reseller involved here. Now, for the reseller scenario, what typically happens is that the user goes to Parallels and say, hey, I want to be a reseller for you, right? And let me see. He gets access to a reseller portal. Give me one second. I'm actually going to duplicate this. It's hard to demo this way. Ah, much better. So, oops. There you go. So I'm now in a reseller portal. So a guy went into Parallels and said, hey, Parallels, I want to be a reseller, and I want to call my reseller functionality Parallels Cloud Demo. So I am actually a reseller that I can see on my Parallels. Oh, nice. So as a reseller, when I actually go in and sign into Parallels, I can see that I'm one of the resellers. As you can see, Parallels Cloud Demo. If I look at it. I am the reseller. So this is my brand, and I've enabled. And I now have access to my customers, my subscriptions, and I can also create additional value-added services. So I, as a reseller, can now go in and say, I want, you know, in my storefront, create a resell offer. So as far as Parallels goes, here, a service plan, and I have a TEED01. So I can actually, I want to clone this existing plan and say, I want to create, I'll use one of the hosted services, pay as you go, right? And I want to call it TE02, right? And that's it. I'm done creating an offer that shows up in my storefront. So I actually am going to go in to Parallels and say, this is my stuff. So I want it to show up in the hosted hosted services tab that I showed you in the panel. So I'm going to go in here. I'm going to be like, edit. So I can only edit it. Oh, it was right there. So I'm going to edit it and say, make this offer show up on the hosted services tab in my storefront. Hosted Azure services, save. And I'm just going to synchronize my service offers with my dashboard. There, synchronization is done. Now, once I go back to my storefront, I will go in and say, go to my hosted Azure services. And there you see, my TEED02 just showed up. So I, as a reseller, basically went in and said, hey, I want my resell offer to show up on my storefront, and I successfully exposed an offer to the storefront. Now, the end user or the customer, the person from an enterprise or, you know, your customer who actually pays for this particular resource, can go in and buy this and will be given access to a certain subscription that Parallels has. So once the subscription gets created, the IT pro or the dev can log into Parallels and get access to his WAP service. So assuming I sign into one of these things, I subscribe to one of these offers, I'm going to show you what a typical IT pro experience looks like. So this is me, right, Sriram Natarajan. So assuming that Ryan basically was the guy who went in and said, hey, Parallels, can you give me a subscription so that my dev, Sri, can actually go in and use? He already did that transaction, and Sri, as a developer, is now going into the Parallels portal, and as you can see, I have access to the pay-as-you-go subscription. Now, here's the interesting part. Now that I've signed into Parallels, Parallels has Azure Pack Services tab here, and here you can actually see a list of services that I have available to you. So like websites count, MySQL DB count, VM count, and MS SQL. You basically got me everything, right? This is Christmas presents for me. So I can now log into my Windows Azure Pack tenant portal directly from my Parallels automation portal. All I did was just click onto the login to portal button. Now, because they have an STS and they have single sign-on enabled, as you can see, I didn't sign in again. Directly from my Parallels portal, I directly went into my Windows Azure Pack tenant portal with the magic of single sign-on through ADFS, or in this case, through Parallels STS, right? And I now have access to a bunch of resources that I just have created, or I can go in and create them and manage them. Once I'm done with this here, this billing data gets shown in the Parallels tenant, in the Parallels portal, that I can actually go in and see how much my dev has used resources. So we saw panel integration. And once a panel has been integrated, we saw how a reseller can be introduced. We saw how the reseller can create additional offers. And once these offers are subscribed to, we saw how end users can go in and consume it through Parallels. Okay? With that, let's just quickly switch back to the slide deck. I think that's the slide deck? Yes. So, now, tenant portal extensibility for reselling. Now, we saw that Parallels was able to kind of hook up the tenant portal directly to their Parallels portal. Now, the Parallels customer can actually have multiple levels of reseller. So you might actually want your own individual identity system. You might actually want your own individual theme and be able to like kind of cater to your different customers differently by scaling out different tenant portals differently. So to support that, in Windows Azure Pack, we have two kinds of extensibilities. One is, let me ask you this. How many of you have actually successfully installed Windows Azure Pack? Okay, so you guys all know that we have a tenant portal, which is an IIS website that has a configuration database, right? So you can actually scale out the tenant portal or create multiple instances of the tenant portal and point it to the same configuration database. So they will actually act as two independent tenant portals for your WAP stack. With that, what you can do is you can plug in different identity systems to each tenant portal independent of the other, and you will be able to theme each portal differently so that each of your resale customers can have a dedicated theme and have their own identity that's brought into the WAP stack. Right? Here, I have a green portal, and I have the standard blue portal, and each of it can be themed differently. The advantage of this is that, assuming that the blue portal caters to my low consumption customers, like these guys are not, you know, and I don't expect a whole lot of usage from these guys. Whereas from the green is actually an enterprise that on a daily basis, I get more requests than I possibly can support, and I want to keep it managed, and I want to keep it scaled out, et cetera. So the advantage of doing this is that you can scale each of these portals independent of one another. So maybe you want to have like 5 instances of the green portal and like say 2 instances of the blue portal. So that would be a really good advantage, right? That is one extensibility that you can do with Windows Azure Pack. The second kind of extensibility you can do with Windows Azure Pack is with just one portal, you will be able to theme it differently. Right? So that is done based on host name. So for instance, if it's an IIS website, through SNI, I go in and say, I have multiple DNS names all pointing to the same website. So through server name indication, I kind of create bindings on my IIS. I can actually show that to you after I've explained this. And I can tell my Windows Azure Pack portal that depending on the domain name, depending on the host name that's available in my request, do a certain operation, which in this case can say, theme my portal differently. Right? So what's the difference between the first extensibility I just showed you and the second extensibility I just showed you? So when would you go for one against the other? Right? So I have my 2 tenant portals, and I have 1 tenant portal. The second seems to be, you know, less cost effective. It's like seems to be less costly than the first option. So when would I go in for the first versus the second? So the first extensibility you would go in, as I said, when you want to have like different customers, when you want to scale them independent of each other, when you want to maintain different isolation scenarios. The second one would be very useful if you're actually doing panel integration as well. So for instance, I have a WAP tenant portal, and I tell it, hey, here are 3 themes. If somebody comes to you with reseller1.com, give it a red theme. Somebody comes to you with contoso.com, give them a blue theme. And if somebody comes to you with reseller3.com, give them a green theme. So depending on who comes to this portal, the portal will be themed differently. So this is a single tenant portal. Now, I have a service provider panel, right? Which, as I said, for Parallels in this case, who can actually redirect me to my tenant portal. So from my Parallels portal, I clicked on login to WAP tenant portal, and I actually went to my tenant portal. So that link can actually change so as to give it a different DNS name so that when somebody clicks on, you know, give me one, takes them to a tenant portal with that particular theme. So if you don't have different level of scales, if you just want to have like a single scale that you want to maintain for your whole stack, and you want to be able to integrate a service panel more effectively, this would be how you do it. So that's the trade-off between 1 and 2. 1 is more infrastructure, different scale. 2 is lesser infrastructure. There are some limitations, but it is actually much less expensive as the, when compared to the first level of extensibility. So let me change gears here. Okay, can you log in, please? Okay, really quickly here. So I have my Windows Azure Pack tenant portal, and I say I go to one of these points, and it actually lets me log in with one of my Active Directory. I say Joe Tenant. Spinning up. There you go. This is one of my tenant portals, which is themed blue. And then I can go to my second tenant portal. I can go to my second portal, says Contoso. This will then again take me to another identity system and ask me to sign in. So if you notice, the first one I logged in with like joetennant@catalcloud.com, and for my second one, I can actually log in with a different identity system. So it's sriraman@live.com. Somebody's already clapping for me. So this is my second domain name, and it's actually themed differently. So now if I take a look at what's in the background, you will notice that I don't have two different tenant portals. I only have a single tenant portal. Where is it? Here. And I have two bindings to it. So in my bindings, I can actually say, hey, you know what? For catalcloud.com, this, and for contoso.catalcloud.com, have a different binding. And I can actually set in my WAP database. This is a 400 session, so I'm going to take you into the database. I can actually define that, hey, for all of these things, give me a different realm. Here, let me show it to you in PowerShell. That might actually be easier. So I wrote a PowerShell script, which will basically tell me, hey, Windows Azure Pack tenant portal, for this domain, identify yourself as this realm. Hold on, it's slow. There you go. For this domain, identify yourself as this realm, and you know, here's your endpoint. And in my Windows Azure Pack C drive inet pub, I can actually go in and say, where'd we put that? Netflix wizard. Third-party themes by domain. I actually have two different themes, one for contoso.catalcloud.com and one for catalcloud.com. So what it does is when it comes to a different domain, it caters and it renders that particular theme. That being said, let's really quick back to the demo. Control panels integrating today with Windows Azure Pack are Parallels. We have Extend ASP who's working on it, NervoGrid, Ensign. So there are more partners coming who actually integrate with Windows Azure Pack. And with that, we come to the end of our presentation. I'm going to hand it off to Ryan.
So thank you guys so much for going through all sorts of API exploration, integration with chargeback and approval systems, pricing APIs, and then a couple of demos exploring advanced reseller functionality. We're actually out of time, so we can't do Q&A here. However, I'll be at the Azure Pack booth all day today. So if you have further questions or would like to discuss anything about self-service, cloud, or Windows Azure Pack, I'd be more than happy to answer those questions for you. So thank you so much, and have a great rest of the time here at TechEd Europe.